Do not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
Welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia. Yeah, I played the wrong theme music. I guess we're starting off tonight's broadcast on the wrong foot. But hey, that's right. We're humans here. We're a bunch of actual flesh and blood humans here. And we tend to make mistakes from time to time like I just did. Michael, I played the wrong theme music. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh, we're going to have to overlook that today. Folks, thanks for tuning in for Project Urantia. This program is based around the premise that our history on Earth has been shaped by celestial beings who are shepherding what's happening down here. Welcome, Michael.
Okay.
So what's going on? Anything happened exciting since we last spoke?
Oh, no.
A nice quiet week?
Yeah, I've been relatively quiet, yet interesting.
Well, it's unavoidable in the news, the possible economic meltdown of the world still hovers over us. You know, they just bailed out Spain, and now Italy, probably the biggest economy so far, is beginning to teeter. You think you foresee any that danger exploding or being contained?
It looks to be somewhat contained. I'm not sure, of course, but you know, when it comes right down to the kind of economies or way in which economies are built in this present time, we are looking at nearly an infinite expansion in debt as possible. So, actually, it's all kinds of ways in which they can try to frame up failing economy, and it's not necessarily, with the concept of, just simply printing more money and then, having this runaway inflation. There's more to it than that, and they're showing their stuff right now, and I guess how to try to contain it. But I believe that the world continues to move, and not all of the world is based purely on the kinds of financial instruments that are being, bent out of shape, you might say, right now.
Well, if you remember, folks, on last week's program, we talked about the possibility that there are humans and celestials. There are some bad celestials out there. I shouldn't say celestials, but how about off-world species that would like to see this fail, that gain a lot if things implode. They're absolutely happy to throw a wrench in the operation if it suits them. That keep you up at night at all?
Not really. Actually, not at all. If anything keeps me up, it's continuing to stay attuned to the activities that does the angels would want us to understand, and it's an ongoing thing that's been ongoing with the human race since its inception, and it's a wonderful thing to understand that they are definitely being educated, believe it or not, by the events that are happening right now, though, it's somewhat predictable that things are going to happen this way. However, it's still an education because we are not robots or gizmo creatures that are, strung out on a string and on a leash or whatever. But we have free will, and we can come up with directed, I guess, choices, perhaps, or make mistakes, and the Celestials themselves are being schooled. There's actually Celestial beings who are right now being schooled at that very place that I went to school at in the New Jerusalem. And that's, of course, way out there orbiting Saturn. And they are really being schooled in the effect of what our planet is going through, because they're not, most of them are not from a fallen planet, you might say. They're much ahead of us in terms of technology, and not like us in terms of having, these many wars and battles and struggles. And our struggle is, in a sense, their struggle, but they watch it very closely. And many of them are really learning a lot by the activity of the human race.
You've discussed in the past that perhaps many of the technological advancements in our history have come when Celestials have helped us out, so to speak. Then there's times where popular belief is that perhaps alien craft that were shot down were reverse engineered. Not that the aliens wanted their craft shot down. We just kind of did it, and then we figured out how they run, in some aspects anyway. Do you think that in the coming times the Celestials will ever give us something, like you'd see on a TV show? They land on the White House lawn, they walk out the door, they say, "We're here to help you. Here is this." I don't know what this is. How about, "Here's this free energy source the size of a tennis ball. How about, here's the cure for cancer." Or, "Here's what dark matter and dark energy are." Would that ever happen, or does that fly in the face of their principle that they won't, the free will, that we have to discover these things on our own? Are they prevented from just handing it to us?
In a sense, they are, prevented from just simply handing things to us. You might say, our power outlets are a little different. And it's much, actually for them, looking from their perspective, it is simpler to allow us to come up and meet them and then for them to come down and meet us on their terms or our terms. Because you might say for, every sort of like going back and say, it'd be nice to change that steam locomotive, to running on the electricity or something like that. And them not really, going back in time and people not having to learn a whole gap of technology, knowing very well that it takes just a little while. And the reason I come up with this idea is because of how I had initially taken the invite by Nella Onisavan, who simply, after, basically, you might say, interviewing me, I went through many of the usual things of being supposedly abducted, but I really wasn't abducted. At a point in which I finally understood what was happening, these beings are higher, but they're still much, much lower than, you might say, what my concept of who God was. But receiving this invite that said, well, do you want to come up with us and find out how things work with us? And I thought that also meant the technology or the secret energies or how you make your crafts work or fly around or all the different technologies. You know, one of my responses was, I'm not very good at math because at the time, you know, I was studying some of the things based on a lot of mathematics, you know, the physics and engineering and the sciences that I'm right presently, you know, working in applied sciences. And I said, that's not important. Then secondly, she said, well, maybe a little bit. It might help you. But you didn't need to be an expert in mathematics. And I said, oh, sure, okay, as long as you bring me back. So as I went over to discover many, many things. One of the comments that came from one of the highest of all teachers in the universe, classified as a Dano, simply said that many of the things that you're looking at and what you're looking at right now and wondering at, you will have in a short time, in your lifetime. You'll see. And that was what we have basically in terms of touch screen and things like that, and our computers being very smart. And the move of seeing much of what was basically a wired world. You know, when we looked at the world technology back in 72, the printed circuit was around. The development of integrated circuits was in its infancy. And the concept of the ASIC, the application-specific semiconductors, which are very, very much of what makes our modern computing world work right now, was just being dreamed of. But these are the things that basically they were talking about. They were saying, you know, these are crystals. How that is made and that is run, it works by growing a lot of it. We grow our structure. We don't build our structure, we grow our structure. Highly sophisticated structures such as the microprocessor is grown on silicon. We're moving away from even silicon right now into an organic type of technology. One of the things that I was amazed at was how light came from seemingly everywhere. And today we've got moves away from our lighting technology, you know, even fluorescent lighting technologies into something called organic light emitting diode technology. Organic meaning that it is based not on silicon, but still uses electricity, but its way in which light is extremely efficient and is a grown technology, again, crystalline base. These are the things that were told to me, and now I'm seeing it exactly as how the Dano instructed me or assured me that a lot of the stuff I was trying to get glimpses of how it worked would be present in my lifetime. I would see it, and I'm seeing it happen, and these things are a real wonder to me because having, you know, let's say the communication age, I'm an amateur radio operator. One of the things that I had to learn as an amateur radio operator was the Morse code. Now, the concept of code is what makes all of high technology communications and even intercommunications through computers work is all coded. And, of course, you know, being able to go 20 words a minute is was really a big deal, you know, versus just basically running along learning it at 5 words a minute. But knowing very well that computers can take that to 20 gazillion words a second versus a minute, that's an amazing thing. And that's what I saw happen in my lifetime. I saw moves from paper tape where teletype messages. I actually worked on equipment that old and archaic from the old teletypes that did have paper tape to, of course, high-speed, presently in high-speed computing and moving right now to levels of technology that are based nearly very close to what we are, that part of us, which is our soul. And we're actually exploring these kinds of technologies. And I'm talking specifically about quantum teleportation or quantum disturbance or quantum entanglement, spooky action at a distance, all of this in which the base structures of matter are able to be interconnected in ways that space seems to be not a problem. Distance and space seem to instantaneously know. And these are the things that have helped explain to me the science behind how they send me messages telepathically and how they disturb parts of me in my mind and why I was taken to align some of the material or matter in which is in me. And they said they adjusted something in deep within my mind and then in my brain, and they said that it would forever change me, but forever give me an understanding that comes from the celestial mind, and that matches some of the discoveries we're making right now in the experiments that we're working with in higher discovery of higher technologies such as quantum entanglement. And these things are just an amazing thing. So when you say, you know, them coming on the White House lawn and offering us all kinds of technology or whatever, there are, but in a way in which is not so direct, and in a way in which we find ways in which they can be integrated into our fabric of our society. And by so doing, we move a bit closer in the realm. They come up to meet them in the level of technology. And people say we're back engineering some of their technology. Well, this may be true, but I've seen and have been with the technologies from the vacuum tube to the present level of technology that we have in integrated circuit, and I'm talking about specific types of super specific designs, the ASICs and stuff that make and drive our smartphones and things like that, and realize that it was all in the making and it was all progressed through a normal level of innovation and perhaps inspiration, but really getting the research done and taking advantage of what little bits that we were able to do in the first aspects of growing the semiconductor transistor to growing the entire application-specific semiconductor, which is like a microprocessor and a whole bunch of special circuits that drive our smartphones today. So these are the things that they told me were going to happen, and they're happening. So in a sense, they are, but they also had an assurance that we were going to get there.
Well, I suppose that's a precursor. If we can learn how to grow a circuit board, we probably could learn how to grow the outside of a spaceship like they do, grow the structures for buildings and furnitures and anything else we need.
Exactly. And we're talking right now in different ways in which to create nanotechnologies, which are small. But when you think about it, their nanotechnology, I remember saying, how is this made? And it's one guy got up, which is basically a gray alien, and his voice was high and squeaky, and he says, it's crystals. And I thought, you know, immediately comes to my mind is a large quartz crystal, you know, on the inside of a geode or something like that, that picture. And he said, no, smaller. I remember that. It's like, oh, that's too big. okay, I got the idea. And it's where I actually, after that, was let out of the class into an area which was being constructed. And there are a couple places, one sculpture, another place that was told to me to be a room, very much like my dwelling place. This is, this would be like a dwelling place. When you come here and you stay for a longer time, this will be your dwelling. This is what it will be. And they were showing me a structure of it, basically the dimensions of it and how it was being grown and how the actual New Jerusalem, that gigantic sphere, grew. And it grew because they are able to interject space and continually sort of like push new rooms into the structure, new spaces. And the room in the structure, instead of staying static in its base dimension, grows. Whatever is added to it expands its diameter, its size. So on continually undergrowth, so it never really has to stay small or whatever size it started at. And that's all part of a revelation, but we'll begin to catch on to a lot of those things later on, and maybe we'll lose the idea, the ability of hammer and nail, and the idea and concept of structure as terms of something we put together, more towards something that we grow or from the external grow. And that's one of the things. It wasn't coded. He said it's not like a tree, which is coded internally, genetically, where the cells know they're going to create a pine tree. It's external to it and guided. That's where I was standing there toward looking at an artist, celestial artist, and you might say of the same category that create crop circles, but he was creating a sculpture, something similar to a statue, but it would almost have life in it. But at the time it was at its base, more base position of growth and structure.
Well, I saw where Massachusetts Institute of Technology is now working with I don't understand this, but quantum computer instead of, and if I understand it, because of the fuzzy stuff that happens in the quantum world, things can be at two places at once.
Right.
And which means by using this as the basis for computing, these things can do an exponential number of things at the same time that we can't do now. Instead of right now, your processor has to do something first and then something second and something third. These would do them all simultaneously. So that means our computing power may grow in a hurry to some ridiculous amount.
Yes.
Okay, now hold that thought for a second. The celestials have to know, observing as long as they've observed worlds, that eventually computing power will become smarter than the people building the computers. Not smarter, but faster. Eventually it will be able to do more than the brain. And what happens then? Have the celestials, is there a, is it like the old tale, well, a civilization grows up until it figures out how to develop the atomic bomb and then it kills itself? Yeah, is there some kind of breaks? Is that a myth? Will computers never get that fast? I don't think so. I think that'll happen in the next 10 years. But is there some kind of safeguard, or is that just can the internet become self-aware? Is it the old, what was that, Skylab or what, or Skynet or something in the Terminator movie? Is any of that possible now that we know that these things can be unimaginably fast and able to do just about anything?
Well, not just about anything, but at least on a primitive level, mimic much of what we are in trying to mimic right now. The area of robotics and area of decision making, our ability haven't moved toward creating a real brain. Right now, we are still at the bug level, and that type of independent thinking. And that's why we can create the rovers that can, you know, go over to Mars and do some basic looking around for us, you know, building a certain amount of artificial intelligence. Our artificial intelligence is very, very far away from, you know, coming anywhere near to the capacity of what our mind is able to do. And our minds are not measured in their ability to calculate something in terms of the same way in which a computer can. Our minds have another factor or other factors that are similar to the quantum entanglement concept, which gives us the ability to get inspired and move in directions in thought that has set us above and beyond even animals with larger brains than us. You know, example of the elephant, the whale, or even animals with fairly closely aligned minds, brains, that cannot even come close to the moving in thought and understanding of the universe. And that is one of the things that is and causes sentience, our ability to be self-aware and realize and seek for the source, the center, the first source and center, or God. And that is a very, very, very big project to take a planet and have implant life at its base level and nurture it through whatever it takes to get it to come to a point similar to what we are as sentient beings. We even, as you were mentioning earlier, at the quantum level, explain that. It's called spintronics. The concept of spintronics is that the electrons move or spin in one direction, you know, or the other. And the spin state can be either spin right is 1 and spin left is 0. And you're at the atomic level already and able to adjust spin of matter or the atomic structure in different states, ones and zeros, the ones and zeros. As a result, you're now computing at a quantum level, the very, very smallest level, in terms of what, you know, we can understand right now. But what I bring forth is the higher understanding, which was something that was, you know, I don't understand. It's just something that was told to me, is that mind that we share is something that we need to tune into and have the great capability to attend to, and that is the higher mind or the divine fractal, that piece of divinity that is in every one of us, and that concept of the very matter having in the potential of computing simply because of the state of its spin being determined by whatever, and also having quantum entangling properties where the spin states can be associated over tremendous distances, share common mind or computing over perhaps galactic dimensions, brings to mind very similar concepts of spiritual association and thought that we possess and that the celestials possess in terms of how they worship, you might say, or coming in beyond the distances that are, you know, we think of in terms of our technology and look for in SETI perhaps, or the radio signal, that oddball radio signal. Anyway, that's a little bit of what's going on right now in terms of our technology as compared to their technology, and yet the very highest technologies that they talked about was already built into us as human beings. Because not all of the celestials, not all off-world sentient beings are given the opportunity or have the attunement to function with the divine factor, the thought adjuster, that little piece of God that we have. In the ancient Sanskrits, even in, I remember looking at some of these depictions on samurai swords and things like that, show the dragon chasing this ball, and it's a common theme that the dragon chases this ball, but that particular ball is extremely, extremely valuable. But it's possessed by every one of us human, and this one that chases this ball is not attuned to this. He wants it, but he can't have it. For some reason or another, he adjusted it out of him and himself, you know, through their own design. When I met some of these people, such as Andorians, that look exactly like each other, I realized that they had tampered with their own race to the point in which they all became just like themselves, one kind of being, and had lost the diversity that is so prevalent in our life, you know, so ubiquitous throughout our planet. But not so much maybe from the Dorian point of view. It's all everybody's not a little different, but I couldn't tell their difference. They all looked the same to me. And that is, you know, the challenge that we have. We have, because of that, the ability to contain. And in some of them, they might have come to a point where they could not contain that divine fractal, and they want it. Some of these nasty ones are just those that don't have that. Basically, the essence of good or divinity isn't present in them. But it doesn't make them evil. It makes them want what we have in terms of divine.
Yeah, the Dorians say, we may all look alike, but we all look good. You know, I when you were talking about, I want to jump back just for a minute, when you were talking about this artificial light that they can grow, I saw maybe 20 years ago where genetic engineering had crossed, I don't know, was it a firefly? But I know it was a tobacco plant. They used some insect or animal from the world and that emits its own light.
Right, firefly and a plant, yeah, tobacco
and,
plant.
And they were able
to... It glowed in the dark.
It glowed in the dark.
Right.
So that's happening right now. I mean, if that wasn't a hoax, then there you go, something that's happening
well,
right
that's,
before.
Yeah, that's how we've been monkeying around with our own genetics. I mean, we haven't developed genetics, but we understand it to a point where we try to find the gene and express it in some other plant, and they experiment, and we find out, wow, it works through these things. And it's been done over and over again, and in one way or another. I mean, the University of Hawaii is one of the leaders in some of those areas, too, creating creaky things like that. And I don't believe that is exactly approved of. However, our human race was just one of those that were, you might say, adjusted and tampered with long ago. And the legacy of the Adam and Eve story is really a bit of the story of how some of the tampering was done, or they call it essentially being created of the image of God, you know.
Well, I was thinking about, well, I was watching another one of Stephen Hawking's programs, and I think they're okay. I don't dislike the shows. But what becomes evident to me, you know, the physicists are always searching for the one equation that explains everything. And while that's a grand idea, it sounds good to talk about it, it's so ridiculous, in my estimation. It's a ridiculous proposition for people like Hawking or Einstein or the most brilliant humans who have ever lived to even be talking about that. When you sit down and you realize, well, take this for instance, 85% of everything that there is, we don't know anything about it. I'm talking about dark matter and dark energy. If you had a building that had 100 rooms in it and you could only look at 15, would you be an expert about that building? Of course not. You wouldn't even know what the other 85 rooms had. That's where we're at right now with many of the things happening, just the matter that's in the universe. We don't even really know what gravity is or how light exactly works. There's all kinds of fundamental questions about our universe that we are clueless about. The most brilliant minds are. And yet we're arrogant enough to say, yeah, we're going to come up with some equation that explains everything when we don't even know what everything is yet.
Well, this is the drive, the same, it is the exact same drive that, you know, causes individuals to seek the higher truth. They don't want to say they're seeking for God because their idea of knowing comes down to, you know, finding truth. But essentially, it is the same drive that causes an individual to seek for God and express it in a different sense, because they use what they've been given, essentially our minds, and are gratified. And this is a wonderful thing, but then when look at just that alone and exclude the bigger picture, and many times becomes a sadder case, because it's really the bigger picture that explains their journey. And it's one in which I was glad to have had Tanninella take me and get me the answer for my primary question, which is one that is faced by these scientists as well as just about every human being who's sentient, is what is the meaning and purpose of life? And why are we, you know, so given to this planet and all of its expressions and people and things? What is this all for and what is it all about? And gratified to receive the answers from this higher celestial sources, and one in which tells me that we're really designed to live forever, but we've got to go through the developmental stages. But it doesn't assure that every individual born on this planet will make that forever journey. Many times mishaps will happen, and soul destruction or damage will happen, making that possibility difficult, while having understanding, the one that I'm trying to portray, one in which is a more complete understanding of both science and religion, will allow us to make that journey, and one in which we won't fail, and we could very well have that eternal journey, assuredly. Given to us, and it's always, we're all invited to participate in it, but we don't always listen to the higher sources.
Well, I think, I don't want listeners to think I'm against science or anything. Bravo. I mean, I stand and support every scientist working on everything to better our human condition and make our world a better place. I just think sometimes when you sit down and it's humbling to look at all the basic, the simple, what seemingly are the simplest questions even a 3-year-old can ask, and we don't really have any answer. We don't really know what gravity is. We don't really know what time is. I mean, we're probably closing in on it. And I guess, at the start of the program, I was hoping that Earth would be like some lost tribe in the jungle when the missionaries show up, and out of their little bag, they got this little thing that cures malaria. Just like that. So there won't be any of those just like that situations for us, huh?
In a sense, not. It will be that way, but There's so much that we are doing right now that is outside of the box, you might say, that kind of interference is necessary. It would be more interference than a rescue. But it does not put out of the picture the concept of rescue. If there is need, then hopefully they headed off at the pass. But if it comes down to a point of rescue, our maybe not our civilization, but some of our species, you might say, shall be rescued. But the whole of those who are able to make this eternal journey have come to a point of alignment and assurance and resonance and attunement will be moved from, you know, this state in, of temporal state into the higher state and you know, progress, that progress. And it's been talked about and written about through the ages in terms of religion and, you know, the concept of the great judgment and the resurrection and all of this stuff.
Well, since you brought it up, there's, I believe, the Catholic Church is the largest religious organization in the world. I could be wrong. Is that the case? Are there more than any other single? It doesn't really matter to the point of what I'm trying to make. It's very, very big. It's like one out of every five people or every six people claim to be a Catholic. We have turmoil in the Catholic Church. What if the largest religious organization in the world melts down? What if the third secret of Fatima, which made the Pope who read it faint, was something very, very bad that happens to the Church? If one out of every five people loses their foundation to continue, or everything they've thought was turned on its head, which I don't believe would happen, I guess that's... But what if the largest religious institution, you know, what if the Pope gets fired? They already... They're going to put his butler in jail for 5 years. What if the mafia has infiltrated the Vatican? Do you think that the collapse of the Catholic Church could trigger a very bad time for the planet?
Well, actually, the Catholic Church is an organization, a religious organization. But the truth that is born in it, if it is absorbed, you know, most truthfully, if it's absorbed correctly, and those that follow the dictates of it, because we have this divine fractal within us, we are able to sort through a lot of the garbage and sort out, sort of like I was once told to how to simplify a lot of religious rhetoric and talk and this, you know, because... religions of the world are numerous, and even within, let's say, the Christian faith, we be the Protestant Catholic divide, and we even within there we have so many more. And they say basically what it says, you know, it's like eating fish. You know, you just eat the flesh and spit out the bones. You know, you got a bone to spit it out. Well, what the amount of that is, that basic idea is, we'd be given a tool, and that is our divine fractal, that piece of divinity within us that aligns us toward truth, brings us toward truth, and if necessary, brings us toward enrolls us perhaps within one of these religions of the world to get some base understanding, and then move us from that into higher realms of understanding, whether it be on an official sense or just passing sense, we end up realizing that the whole progress has been a long story. The concept of, you know, stories about ancient aliens and things like that. And that's a form of religion in itself. Religion means reconnecting. And reconnecting with celestial roots. That's religion. It's a different kind, but it's still trying to reconnect the statement that we are them and they are us. Actually was told to me face-to-face by Nella. When I looked into her eyes, she took off, you know, those like sunglasses, but they wear them like giant contact lenses. And she took them off, and her eyes had a pupil, you know, and big pupil. Beautiful. And I said, wow, your eyes are like mine. And she said, no, Michael, your eyes are like mine. And that gave me a little bit of a hint. And I always remember that as a hint on their celestial influence and our reconnecting with them, the religion of reconnecting with the celestials. And the invite basically says, long before Earth and the solar system is dissolved and it be no more, this we know will happen. I would hope that you will have all joined us here and live with us in this abode, in the universe. And they live in cities that are literally hung in space, architectural spheres, worlds that they make themselves, beautiful, filled with sentient beings that move through the universe, not ever bored, not ever stuck in a rut, but always having a wonderful time moving around the universe.
The Catholic Church has long been suspected, I don't know if it's true or not, generations of people have suspected that the Vatican holds knowledge that they choose not to reveal. The Dead Sea Scrolls, they've wind up in the hands of a Catholic-run institution that has only released 10 of the 50 books they found. Why not? After 40 years, 50 years. What if, and I'm just playing conspiracy corner here, so don't write any hate mail, folks, but let's just do a mind test here. What if we find out that the Catholic Church has documentation of everything we've been doing on this program, and that this knowledge has been open knowledge for 2,000 years, and they chose to sit on it? Is that a game changer? And the word gets out. Now, what if the word doesn't get out? Have they stifled our evolution? What if we knew all this stuff 2,000 years ago and we were allowed to go with it and it wasn't beaten down and you weren't burnt at the stake to talk about it? And again, this is a hypothetical question, but what if we find out there is hidden knowledge there and they've been sitting on it this whole time because they don't feel we deserve to know about it?
I think that's probably true in some aspects, because by releasing more of the real truth could hinder their control structure.
Bingo.
But their greatest control structure during these long ages was ignorance. Knowledge and writing and reading and all of that was, you know, kind of held in a sacred place. But that was because of practical necessity. Not everybody could spend the time to go and get educated. That was a luxury in ancient times. And as society progresses, the agriculture progresses, you know, the need for the division of labor progressed, these kinds of things became a essential element in the upbringing of creatures. And as a result, you know, people could thereby read their own ancient texts or actual the Bible, and then, you know, have their own revelation, you might say, that, you know, the big one being, of course, the Protestant movement, which, you know, said the structure of Catholicism was, you know, a big show. But it's religion many times has to become a show. In fact, our a form of a religion, that concept, as I said earlier, in ancient aliens, is a form of a show. But it's really talking about reconnecting. Religion, redoing again, legion, reconnecting with divinity, reconnecting with the society of the universe. And I think that from what I've gathered from even people that have approached who had faith of their Catholic Church as being, you know, ultimately perfect, and finding out that there's imperfections in there, and there are many priests who didn't do things that were very nice and some things very bad, didn't interrupt their faith in God it interrupted their faith in the leaders, and realized that we are corruptible. And the idea is that we want to move from the corruptible to incorruptible, and a lot of it has to do with our stand in understanding in ourselves, and that's where the understanding of where our destiny truly lies, every individual's destiny lies in a much higher state of being than we are right now, if we choose to move in that direction and to write upon the plane of our soul things that can be transported by our soul, not so many the things that cannot be transported by our soul, and say like the concept of quantum entanglement, the idea of writing down on that quantum surface all the experiences of our life that we cherish, the relationships, the pain, the love, the hurt, all of it into the plane of our soul, versus piling up a whole bunch of gold and said, let's throw this on top of the soul and it'll never be carried across the universe in both space and time. This is where the message of living life that the religions try to teach, they try to, and they always end up boiling it down to this, don't do this and don't do that, but it really is what to do, it really means because of misguided efforts and individuals try to gain greater understanding, sometimes they would burn them at the stake, and this is a sorrowful thing, and it's exactly the kind of thing I said, don't blame me for all the problems and things like that that happened on our planet. It's not my fault. What can I do? And I stood in front of them, and these guardians and these destiny guardians, high angels, basically understood. And that's where I came in, and they gave me the experience, the knowledge, and attunement to be able to hear them and understand their point of view, and then share it with the rest of the world or whoever would want to hear it. And I've got to thank you there, Z-Man, for allowing this program to continue, because it's a way their voice can be heard on this planet.
It is. The pleasure is all ours. Christianity as a whole is a big religion. You got the Protestants, the Lutherans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the Catholic Church is only one part of that. But can you think of another religion or part of a religion in the whole world? Nobody thinks the Lutherans are hiding something. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is rumored to perhaps have things that they may not be revealing. But other than Christianity, my understanding of the rest of the world's religions, they don't have these suspicions. They lay it out on the table and let you make your decision, right?
Yeah.
So isn't it odd that the Catholic Church, they'd burn you at the stake if the world was, because if you didn't say the world was flat, and they were wrong. They burned you at the stake if you said the sun revolved around the earth, and they were wrong. They've been wrong several times. They're humans, of course, but, is it, humans are making the decisions if there's knowledge that's there that they're choosing not to release so that they can stay in power. That's wrong, which means they've already lost their moral compass to run the church. And okay, we could get into a whole topic like that, but I guess my question was, what other religion in the world has these suspicions?
Well, just about every religion in the world has, corruption or an error. And yet, if you look at the source and the beginnings of them, it is essentially very simple. But even things hidden, things unsaid, were at the start held back by even the first initiators of truth and knowledge. They weren't necessarily held back. They said, an example would be Jesus Christ himself saying, I have many things to say to you now, but you cannot bear them right now. Not so much that they would be taken and killed or anything, these things they could bear, but they couldn't understand a lot of them because it's just too hard to understand where we are right now, understanding the levels of what we would be considering technology, or I consider technology, and our ability to integrate ourselves into the web, you might say, or the mat, or the association with the celestial technologies out there. It's not as hard as we think. In fact, much more intuitive and easy to function with than our own. Trying to get, you know, work with a smartphone, you gotta go through certain techniques, some of these...
Not much longer. You just talk to the Siri girl, and there you go.
Yeah.
She handles it for you just like freaking Star Trek, man.
And that's true. And it's but one of the things that is important is our interpersonal, interassociation with each other on our planet mimics or is very similar to how we have to learn to associate with celestial beings. They have personality, they have understanding, and they don't necessarily share some of our base nature, or animal nature. Sometimes it was written, you know, like you said, into the religions of the world, or even some of the greater religions, such as Christianity, that made God look like a human being with anger and jealousy and things like that. But these were just placed in there to give some reference toward being approved or disapproved. Quickly we are, you know, moving into the realm in which it's very, very troublesome. We can destroy ourselves right now and have no planet left, or we can choose to have a wonderful planet with a very different outset when we understand and put the whole world on its structure and surface as individuals who understand their real purpose in life, which is to ascend to everlasting life in the universe of sentient beings who also share that journey and that goal.
I'll go for that plan. I'm on that side. Guys, we have overrun the program a couple of minutes. I apologize to the CBS News. They can wait. Make them wait for it. Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble for that. But thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're going to have to close this program right now. We ran a couple of minutes over, and we apologize for the shows coming up after us. Michael, as always, fascinating program. Can't wait for next week. Thank you for all that you do for this program.
You're welcome.
Guys, we're out of here. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Artie Kornfeld's program follows the CBS News.